Welcome to the Too Posh Podcast.
I'm Gabrielle. I am a former mafia princess and the owner of our Too Posh Boutique. And I'm here with my beautiful daughter, Marcella.
I'm Marcella. I am a dancer, choreographer, model, and the designer for Too Posh. And I cannot wait to talk to Whitley.
Who is my son's adorable girlfriend.
Hi, I'm Whitley. I like to create things. I'm kind of a nerd. Kind of a nerd, and I like to make people smile.
What will they say next? You're listening to the Too Posh Podcast.
Well, welcome everyone. Hi, Marcella.
Hello.
We're missing Whitley this week, but she has an important school project to do, so we gave her off. But we get to welcome a very special guest today. It's Amber Rogers.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Amber. Thank you for coming, and happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
It's even more exciting, and we're so glad to have you here on this very special International Women's Day.
I know.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Such a great birthday, International Women's Day. How do you beat that?
Is that always your birthday?
Yes,
is
it falls on March 8th.
Oh. So Women's Day is always March 8th?
Every yes. March 8th, okay. We celebrate National Women's Day, and it commemorates the movement for women's rights. And a global day celebrating the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women. And what's really cool today, McDonald's is flipping all their iconic signs to make them a W.
A W.
No way.
Yeah. How did they do that?
Oh, I got to get a picture of this.
Yeah. So that was a cool, very unprecedented statement for them to do today. So that was
super. I need to post something.
Yeah. Today. So, I wanted to talk a little bit. Amber and I, we met about 8 or 9 years ago, right?
That's right.
I can't believe it. And we were put together in the most interesting way because with our lingerie boutique, Marcella and I were getting ready to do a big fashion show at Silver City, actually. We're preparing for it.
I don't know if I know this story.
And at my house, I had all these racks that were ready to go, and we had this one section of the show that was all brides, and we had one divorced diva that was going to come out.
Oh, yeah.
Marcella was actually the divorced diva, and it had a sash, and everything was ready for her. And I found a customer on Facebook. She's a realtor here in town. Tiffany is her name. And she came over to try on things. It was close to Halloween, so she tried on costumes, and she saw the little divorced diva outfit with the sash, and she goes, "Oh my gosh, you need to meet my friend, Amber. She has a company for divorced divas," and she would just go crazy over this outfit. And I go, "All right, cool." So I contacted you, and we talked on the phone first night, hit it off right away, and then planned on meeting. And Patrick and I came and met you and Vanessa, who was your partner at the time.
I remember.
And we just hit it off immediately, and we had all these plans, and you told me that you had started this company called Divas. So tell us a little bit about how that came about, what it was, what it stood for, what it is today, all these little things.
So Divas stands for Divorcing Independent Very Able Survivors. And I decided to do it after I went through my own divorce, which divorce is just so difficult. I always tell people your marriage might be over, but your life is not. And a lot of people feel like their life is over when they're going through a divorce. So we basically created a network of people that could help others that were in pain and dealing with a divorce situation.
So funny, I was visiting my girlfriend last night, and she, Misty, you remember Misty?
Vaguely, I do.
She was asking, I told her you were coming on, and she was asking me about you. She goes, is she still doing divorce divas? I thought of her because her sister is getting divorced.
Oh, really?
So I think she was thinking of you. I was like, I don't know. I don't know if you still do it.
Well, we didn't get the funding, so it was really disappointing, you know, okay. And that's one thing that I think really surviving that was kind of the hardest part for me. And I think that our failures can lead us to bigger and better things sometimes.
For sure. But I want to just say that what you had put together was so unbelievable. I had been divorced but remarried, and I could see all the benefits that this company had because you put people in touch with, especially women when they're married for so many years. they feel lost sometimes. They're at home raising kids. They haven't worked in forever. They don't even know how to find a lawyer or anything for that matter.
So true. And typically they have no idea about their finances, which is a huge deal. And we had a team of financial advisors that could help people. And it really was an amazing company. We did a lot. We helped a lot of people. We touched thousands of lives. And, you know, it was really fun to watch the transformations.
It was unbelievable.
How'd you come up with that name?
I prayed about it. So okay. I literally was like, God, please don't let my divorce kill me.
Yeah.
And I just heard you're going to go through the worst, but when you get better, you're going to be better than ever. And I heard you're going to be a diva again. So I flew out of bed and I wrote down diva. And I'm like, what do I do with this?
Okay.
And then I came up with divorcing independent, very able survivors.
Okay. I was curious about that.
And what was really cool, it was not just for women. It was also for men.
Guys. We had 50% men.
Really?
People told me, they said, men will not participate in a company called Divas. And I said, men will follow beautiful women no matter what. It doesn't matter what we
call
it.
Did anybody ever meet?
Yes. We had a couple that met and got married through it. So it was
That's really cool.
It really was.
But I just thought it was so awesome because when you get divorced, you don't think this will happen, but my mom used to always say, you're going to lose some friends. And I was always like, I'm not losing any friends because they were all my friends to begin with. But what you don't think about is these people have families and they don't necessarily want to deal with you going through a divorce or with the changes. So yes, you lose a lot of friends that you would never think you lose. And then you feel very lost and you don't know where to go. Well, who do you go out with? Where do you go for dinner? And you made that so easy for everyone. You made all these events happen. You used to go on boats. You used to have monthly get-togethers and
we definitely had fun.
Definitely had so much fun. It was so awesome. I was always like, man, if I was divorced, I'd just be there all the time. So it was really, really, really cool.
We had quite a few limo rides too. So
yeah,
Mr. Ron Darby, I sure miss him.
You had your own limo driver. He would come everywhere and he just passed away recently, which is super sad.
He did.
He was also Marcella's limo driver for her surprise 30th birthday.
Yeah.
Party.
Yeah. That was cool. Divas is no more.
Well, I'm not really. I've been basically begged to bring it back in. So, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll revitalize it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bring it back to life.
I feel like so many people would want to use that. I'm surprised you didn't get the funding that you needed.
Well, I think, I don't know if you want to touch on that a little bit, but I feel like you had several incidents of people that took advantage of the business, your situation, that took advantage of your kindness, of your loving nature. Because the one thing that has always stood out to me about you is you are the most encouraging woman to other women. You are, if another woman is doing great, you're so excited for them. You're never jealous.
We
never
need more of that.
Yeah. We do. Yeah. It's sad because women get jealous so easily and you would think that they would collaborate, but a lot of times they're more competitive and it is difficult to have a business. And you're right. Some people did take advantage and, you know, pulled me in a lot of directions and made promises that didn't come to fruition. And so that was very difficult. And you would think the first time that happens that you learn a lesson, but just kept happening. You know, we filmed for a reality show and there were a lot of disappointments with, you know, being in that position because I literally thought the first time that I was on Good Morning Texas, like, oh my gosh, I made it. This is so exciting. It's just not necessarily the case. I mean, media is good to bring attention to things, but you have to do a lot more. And running a business is very difficult.
Right. And you did it for how many years?
Seven.
7 years. You never, ever, ever gave up. I mean, it's incredible. And in a way, I feel like something will happen where somehow this will be reborn and come back because it was a great, great thing. I mean, you had constant meetings where all the people get together that are supportive and there are lawyers and women helping women find housing and child support, children, like there were all these things. What all did you have? I can't remember all of it.
Well, we had financial planners that basically there's a lot of designations out there where people can have a divorce designation. And a lot of people don't understand that dealing financially, even real estate, lending, all of those things, there's a lot of people out there that do have a designation, and it is a little different in a divorce situation.
Very, very different. It's very difficult. I mean, most people, most women, if they're just home taking care of their children, they don't even know
where to begin,
where to begin, where the money right. is, or how do you even move out, or what do you do next?
Well, and I think what you said is so important. You touched on this, but I used to tell people, I'm like, be prepared because your friends are going to change. And you just start to feel so isolated when that happens.
Very, and it's disappointing and you don't understand it. But at the same time, I've always said, having gone through it myself, I can't judge them for not wanting to be involved in the mess, because it becomes a mess at
it
first.
It becomes a mess. Yes, I've as many people as I've helped, I think probably two of them I saw and they didn't have kids and they were easily able to move in their own direction forward. But when you have kids, you are, you know, you're connected forever, like it or not.
Right. It was the half of you and half of him. So you also have to try to be kind about the other spouse, and that doesn't always work. So those are all.
I don't know. I haven't found anyone to marry me yet. So I don't know.
I'm sure they're standing in line. You're just not ready.
I think so too. Around the corner.
I'm a lot people. To handle.
not enough to handle. Yeah. For the right guy, you're not enough.
Yeah.
So, there's actually a really funny story I want to tell that happened at Divas one time, because you had monthly Survivors of the Month and you would have a get together, and then the Survivors of the Month would speak about their experience and try to help other women. And Amber nominated me one month and I had to speak about my life and my story and everything. And I'll never forget, there was about, I mean, close to 60 people in the room. And I got there and some of my friends came and I look up and I go, oh my gosh, my ex-husband's divorce lawyer is in the room and I'm supposed to talk about my divorce. And I'm like, all right. Well, that was a funny backstory to it though, because it was about child support back then, and my ex-husband didn't pay child support. So he was behind, and I always let it go. But then we didn't have a lot of money. And I was like, okay, someone told me, if you fight for it, then that's kind of like a job for you. You get paid. And I go, okay, I can do that. And I had found out that he had gone and always hung out at Zaza or something and bought women like $20 drinks. And I'm like, that's enough. I need to get some of that child support. So I did go to court, to family court about it. And he hired that lawyer that was part of Divas, but I didn't know this. And
how random.
I know. It's very random. So random. And I got a call from that lawyer's office and they called me and said I had to come talk to meet with him, whatever. So Patrick and I went to that office, and I know when he came around the corner, he was so shocked to see me, because he must have heard totally different things. And we actually became friends. And then we had to go in front of the judge one time, and I didn't have a lawyer. I couldn't afford one. And this lawyer did it for free for my ex-husband, which he did that a lot. I think would just talk people into doing anything.
Yeah.
And this lady judge was so mean. I'll never forget it. And she was like, you guys just go in that other room and figure it all out. I'm tired of this. And I was like, okay. And we go in, and your friend, the lawyer, sits in there and he starts getting really tough on me, and I started freaking out. I was like, you don't understand. Don't tell me what it's like when your son has a bad injury and has to have surgery that costs $10,000 and you don't know where to have it, where to get it from, and you don't get child support, but he's buying drinks, blah, blah, blah. I went crazy in that room and he never said another word. And it was kind of like, all right, I got it, you know? And then the next time I saw him was at the Divas meeting where I had to speak.
I was just in shock because she said, oh, my ex-husband's attorney is here. And I had never had something like that happen. It was actually on my birthday, too. We always did big events on my birthday to celebrate International Women's Day. And I looked over at her and I said, do I need to ask him to leave? She said, no, it's okay. You know, so you were a really good sport about that. And he's a great guy.
He's a great guy. We're actually friends today. And he gave me his book. He wrote a book about divorce.
He wrote a book about staying married.
Oh, he wrote a book about staying
because
married.
Because he had dealt with divorce for 30 years and he saw how devastating it was. So he decided to write a book about how to stay married.
That's right. He gave me that book, actually. It was really sweet. Now, let's go a little bit away from divas for a moment and go back to your childhood a little bit. Tell us about how you grew up, how you were raised until like you were a teenager, and then tell us what happened to you as a teenager.
So I'm the oldest of four, and my parents were young when they had me, so I think that they did the best that they could, but it was a difficult situation, and they used to argue quite a bit. And that's part of the reason, too, that I started Divas, just because I didn't want to see people stuck in that situation, because there were many years there that they probably should have separated and divorced. Now they're happily married, so that's a good thing. But we moved quite a bit. When I was in seventh grade, we moved, and I met this guy, and basically I thought I dated him, and, you know, I was 14. My gosh, what does a 14-year-old know? So I thought I was in love with this guy and all this stuff, and he proceeded to actually rape me. And, you know, it
raped you at 14?
Yes. And so...
like, were you guys, like, at a movie? What were you
No. We were alone in a house. Oh. And so, you know, of course, he then tells me, I'm sorry, you're just so beautiful. I couldn't help it. I couldn't help myself.
How old was he?
He was 16, so we're 2 years apart. And in fact, tomorrow's his birthday, so I have the pleasure of
being so
thinking
close
about that.
Oh, God. Wow.
Yeah, and never forget that day. So basically, about a year went by, and I had a best friend named Katrina. And she came up missing. So she was missing for 2 years. In fact, I just heard about this young lady over at the Shops of Legacy. They think that they might have found
Christina
her.
Morris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my heart goes out to her family. When you have somebody missing, your life just stops. And literally you go through periods where you're like, oh, my goodness, I just want them to find her, even if it's a body. And then you think, oh, my God, you feel so guilty, like thinking that you wish, you know, you just want a body at this point. So I know what her family's going through, but it was very difficult for me. And at 19, they finally took it to trial. And so I was involved in a capital murder trial at the age of 19.
So, but tell us. So, okay, wait. You were 14. You had you met this guy. He raped you. Did you report him?
No.
You didn't say anything?
No.
You didn't tell your family? You told no one?
No, actually, some close friends knew. So the girl, Katrina, that he murdered, she actually knew the situation. There were people around us that knew, but none of them told parents. And
so, but you were 14. Was Katrina 14 too?
No, she was 17.
Oh, she was a lot older.
She was quite a bit older than me.
Okay, so how long after he raped you did he... But he never raped, like, he didn't know that he raped her before, so he just basically killed her?
Yeah, you know, it took 2 years to actually find her, so at that point there wasn't any forensics or anything, so they could tell if she had been raped. But when the trial came out, he'd actually raped about 10 other girls. I was sequestered, so I don't know the exact amount, but I do know that there were several. And, you know, one thing that, you know, if I could go back and tell my younger self, is that I did internalize it. And I thought, well, I'm the reason that this happened. And maybe I did lead him on, and maybe he's right, you know. And people who are predators are not, you know, they don't look like monsters. A lot of times they have great personalities. He was a sociopath. And he had a magnetic personality. People loved him. So I didn't even know if people would believe me at that point.
So the guy who raped you is the guy who murdered your best friend?
Yes.
And how did they know that? Like, how did that come? Like, who found that out?
Well, I was the last person to see her alive, and I saw her leave with him. So that's why I was such a key factor in the trial. And in fact, the prosecutor even said, you know, we would not have got this conviction without your testimony.
And how old were you guys when that happened?
I was 14 when he raped me. I was 15 when she came up missing. They found her when I was 17. And then I was 19 when we went to trial. So essentially, from 14 to 19, my whole entire life was disrupted. And, you know, I suffered from PTSD and a tremendous amount of guilt because I didn't tell. And I felt like if I would have told, she would still be alive.
And did he say, like, and like, why? I mean, so he killed her as a teenager, like a teenager killed another teenager. And how did he kill her?
They found that she had two shotgun wounds. And again, there was really not a lot of, you know, they didn't have DNA back then. And by the time they found her, you know, it was just basically her bones. Yeah, they couldn't go back in and tell a lot of things, unfortunately.
So when you had to go to court, did you have to face him? You saw him in court?
I did. And it's not like you see in the movies at all. And basically I couldn't testify that he had raped me because it didn't have anything to do with the murder trial. So they were two separate things. And they came back to me because he got life in prison, which is actually only 27 years. So in 2 years, I'll be doing parole hearings, which a lot of people don't understand that. Life in prison doesn't mean life. So he could be out.
Why does it mean life? Why only 20 something years?
I don't know the answer to that.
I did not know that.
I wish I did. But he was up for capital, so he could have got the death penalty. But the rapes were not included in the murder. So they came back and asked me if, you know, we wanted to go back to trial for the rape. And my family and all of us made a decision not to go back through that. I mean, I had just gone through a 3-week pretty serious trial. So since he got life, we decided not to proceed.
And he didn't kill anyone else. He just raped a lot of people.
He did rape a lot of people. And no, he didn't. He went to jail shortly after she, even though the trial for her didn't happen. He went to jail before her body was even found because somebody else came out about a rape.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
That is unbelievable.
And that was here? In Dallas?
It was in Flower Mound, Texas, which became rated as one of the safest and you know, communities in DFW. And I always tell people, you know, it's safe until it's not. You never know when something like this can happen. So you always have to be aware. And, you know, I tell my kids all the time, one person can change your life forever and not necessarily in a good way. So you have to be very careful about who's in your circle.
I love that statement more than anything. That's the truth, isn't
it? And you feel like that was really damaging, I'm assuming, to your self.
Very. The PTSD, it took years to overcome it. It took years for them to... I literally used to have nightmares every single night that I was being murdered. And one of my friends told me, he was like, how are you going to die? And I'm like, I already know I'm going to get murdered. And he's like, why would you say that? And I said, because I dream about it all the time. He's like, you need to tell your doctor. And the doctor was like, I can't believe they haven't diagnosed this. So I went through a tremendous amount of therapy. It takes work to get over something like that.
I can imagine.
And happy to say that I don't have the dreams anymore. So that's, you know, obviously good.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I just want to ask, when he raped you, that was once and then ever again? Or was that a repeated thing? Did you still see him?
I still saw him. I did. So he did it twice. And then basically I consented. And, you know, I believed him. I believed everything he told me. So that was, you know, unfortunately at that age, you're not an adult yet. Your brain doesn't work like an adult. And it is scary, you know, mm-hmm. two teenagers and one murders the other. And unfortunately, he grew up in a very, very abusive home and just didn't have good role models. And I'll tell you, at the end of the day, and I just had this conversation on my Facebook. I don't know if you saw it. I asked if people believe in the death penalty. And basically, at that point, there is no justice because it doesn't bring the person back. So I don't think him being put to death would have made me feel any better about the situation at all.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't. I would not even know.
But I mean, now that he is up for parole in 2 years, do you feel any different about that now?
You know, I mean, it's interesting. I was able to forgive him, but I don't. I think, in my opinion, and I know a lot of people are against this, I think the family should have the right to say what happens to the murderer, the person who's committed the offender. You know, I didn't feel like it was my place to make those decisions, and it wasn't. And the final, you know, judgment to me doesn't come here anyway. So do I want to be involved in the parole hearings? No.
No.
No, but I will be there.
Are you scared if he gets out?
Not personally scared because I have a lot of good people around me, but I would be scared for other people.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I can't imagine you would come out better than when you went in.
Fixed. Yeah.
No, there's no way.
And it's interesting because I wanted to see him and I had to get approval to see him and he denied it. So he wouldn't see me because I was going to actually go and see him in prison. I thought, wow, that's interesting. I have to get approval to see the guy who raped me and murdered my friend. So, yeah, it's very interesting how the justice system works.
Yeah, it's disturbing, actually.
Yeah, it is disturbing.
Was it like a high profile case back then?
Oh, my gosh. It was very high profile.
Really?
Nothing. That was the first homicide that had happened in that town. And it was awful. I mean, the media can be very persistent. And they were at her funeral and there was a picture of me and they took it. The newspaper did. And it every time I think about that picture, I just cry because it was just awful. I mean, you just see such pain on my face. And I mean, to do that at somebody's funeral, I just think really crosses a line.
Yeah.
For sure.
Wow. Like the, yeah. I can't think of the word.
That's the invasion of privacy. That, yeah. Majorly. So after this traumatic experience happens, then how do you move forward with dating and you end up getting married? How did you meet your husband?
I met him actually when I was 19 and he was actually at the trial every single day that, you know, well, when I testified, I want to say every day, but he was in the courtroom. My parents weren't. I didn't want my dad in there because he would have probably killed him. Okay. So there would have been two trials. So, you know, I was able to say who was in the room and who wasn't. And, you know, I'd gone through so much that I was more mature than people my age. So my husband was actually 11 years older.
Okay. I mean, he's a wonderful guy.
He is a wonderful
So person. You got married and yes. had two children and you were very successful in your career back then. What mm-hmm. was it? Tell us a little bit about that.
I was in real estate. So I was a builder. You know, I built the business. I had a great network and I loved real estate. But really what happened with our marriage, you know, looking back, hindsight, of course, is 2020, I fell into deep depression and that's where my manic depression started. And, you know, I blamed him.
How long into the marriage?
We had been married for 9 years and I'll never forget it was I was 30 years old and we were having a birthday party and I had like 150, 200 people at my house, like, how weird all this happens on my birthday, right?
Right.
And they're all in the house and I walk outside and I'm crying. And one of my good friends walked out and she's like, what's wrong? And I said, I have nothing to live for. And she's like, oh my gosh, what are you talking about? You've got two beautiful kids. I mean, I had the life that people wanted to have. And I was so deeply depressed that, you know, I didn't know how to get out of it.
What was the depression from? Do you know, like, how that started? Or,
well, you know, being manic depression or bipolar, mm-hmm. basically, there is a chemical imbalance.
Okay.
And so why it triggered at 30, I really don't know. I know that my first manic episode was when I was 33. And actually, you saw a part of that. And it's scary.
I did. It's very scary. It's frightening and it's scary and people don't understand it. I thought it was sad because I love you and right. I didn't want to see you that way. I know people get very mad and frustrated about it and not everyone is understanding about it, but I think you were at the time, was that the first one?
That was, yes, that was the first one.
Does it scare you? Like, do you know when that's happening or do you feel out of control? Do you wish you could control it, but you just can't? Or like, what go, like,
Yeah. Good question.
I'm just curious.
Well, it's controlled by medication, you right. know, and it definitely can be controlled by that. But accepting that you have it is very difficult.
Okay.
But to answer your question in a better way, when you're heading into mania, mania is heaven. Mania okay. is like literally it's fun until it's not because then you crash.
And then what would mania, like what would that be? What would that look like? Yeah. I'm just curious because I see like running in circles, but I don't know if that's correct.
There's rapid talking, you know, just like, oh my gosh, look at this. And your world is just completely, you're delusional, you know? I mean, I've had it where colors are very vivid and you just see things that other people don't see. It literally, if there could be a heaven on earth, mania is heaven. I mean, you just think you can do anything, accomplish anything. It's really unbelievable. And I, strangely enough, part of the reason I haven't killed myself because I've been through such depression is that I believe there is a heaven and I want to go back there. And, you know, mania is unbelievable. And that's why a lot of people who are bipolar actually won't take their medication because they love the manic side.
So the manic side is not just like a burst, like when you're mad. Is this something you'll stay in for days?
Oh, when you're manic, you're happy.
Oh, I see.
I mean, you are on top of the world. It's exciting. You're going 90 to nothing. The crash comes after the mania.
How long does mania last about?
It can last. I mean, it's different for different people and going up to it, leading up to it. I think probably my longest one was maybe, I mean, leading up and everything, probably 2 to 3 weeks. But
right.
there's no like, oh, you know, it lasted a day or 2 days.
No, but that's what gets confusing. Like, I'm going to talk about myself seeing you this way, because yeah. when I met you and for the most part, when I knew you, you were like this, like you are today, like completely with it, normal, talking, I mean, very successful, smart. When that phase happened, it was so confusing because you would say things that I'm like, what does she mean? Like, this does not make any sense at all.
So and people around know that something's not right.
is off. Like you can tell something is off and you cannot put your finger on, is she drinking? Is she like on drugs? Is she on medication? And I know for a fact that because we've talked about it, I've seen it, those moments get triggered by men.
Men. Always by. Nothing can make me go more sideways than a man.
Wasn't that the damn truth?
Oh, that's true for all of us.
No offense, Spider. Not you.
I mean, and it's like, I think I'm not a, I'm a psychiatrist, a psychologist, right. anything. I'm just your friend. And I think what happens is you crave love and attention from men so much and so severely that when you meet someone that you like, and then if they return that attraction or attention in the slightest way, you go from 0 to...
to I'm getting married.
I mean, to I'm getting married. And men don't function that way. So when you do that, men start backing up. because they go, whoa, out. What's happening? They freak out. And the more they freak out, the more you go forward.
The more I want them. You know, it's funny. I always say if there were no straight men in the world, my life would be perfect. No offense against Spider. But I have a really good friend, and I feel more comfortable around gay men. I have right. Most of my friends are gay men. I mean, a big majority of them. And one of my good friends always says, you know, the only way Amber likes a man is if he doesn't want her back.
Yep.
You know, he says he has to have money and he can't want her and she'll be all in.
Oh, yeah.
And what do you think that, do you think that going backwards, that is because of what happened to you at 14?
Oh, I'm sure it has an impact. Okay. I mean, even subconsciously, you yeah. can't really, you know, even through all the therapy and all that stuff. But it is all of my manic episodes. You can tie back to a guy. Every one of them.
Every one of
them. So did your husband make you manic?
No. But when I met him, I wasn't bipolar.
Oh, okay. So this was like a later. So you can have bipolar like later.
Right.
Yeah.
And divorce can trigger bipolar.
Okay.
So if you have that chemical imbalance and then you have a huge stressor in your life, it can trigger all of those things. And so I literally, you know, I had PTSD and bipolar. What she's talking about, though, is a little more of the borderline. So I also have borderline personality disorder. For me, that's the one that's hardest to control. And that does have to do with your interpersonal relationships. And I do think that a lot of that comes from the rape.
Okay.
I mean,
and this is all in your brain. Like, this is all the chemical imbalance in your brain, right? I'm trying
well,
to.
You know, they've really done a lot of research yeah. on it. And so they're trying to figure out how much of it is environment versus, you
that's
know,
what I'm, yeah, the I'm imbalance. Curious. Okay.
Right. And there hasn't and been any good answers yet. Yeah. So they're
and
trying to figure
you
out.
Have a grandmother that had that, though, correct?
Yeah, so it ran in my family.
Okay.
But she didn't have the borderline and the PTSD. Those, I think, were more from the environment and from the trauma.
Now, do you want to explain a little bit, like, from the first one, because I was there so much, so I
oh
kind
my
of
goodness.
I mean, it was very interesting, because and what always happens too, so far it has always happened, when Amber meets that person, she always calls me and she goes, oh my gosh, you have to come meet him. Now I'm always like, okay, I'll be there. When do you want me there? So then I meet them and I kind of want to always take her by her hand and go, okay, hand me your phone. You don't get to text him anymore. You're going to go away for
hang
a little
out
bit.
For like a few months in yeah, the beginning.
Let him fall in love with you first before you get so aggressive with them. I want to always help because she is such a lovable person. I want her to be happy. But the way that she goes about it with men is all the wrong ways.
Right.
So I'm always trying to save her. But once she is there, there's no saving. It just goes.
It's just down.
Crazy.
It is down.
I know you wrote a book, so I know this is in the book. So you can tell us a little bit what happened. Like some of the, because they're really funny episodes to me. Like, oh
some of them are really funny. You know, the book is called Recovery on the Rocks. And the first chapter is called The Handshake with Benefits. So
what does that mean?
There's a guy that came into my life and I call him Jackson. And basically, Jackson was very wealthy, very successful. We were working together a lot. And that was the first trigger for me mm-hmm. was Jackson. And
very handsome.
Very handsome. And a great guy, you know. And
charismatic.
He was. Mm-hmm. And we liked each other from the very beginning. So one day I called him and I said, hey, Jackson, have you ever heard of Friends with Benefits? And he's like, yes. And I go, that never works. He's like, okay. And I
this
said,
is just random.
Yes, I just randomly did this. And I said, how about we do something different? Let's make it a business deal. Let's do, and let's shake hands when we're done. And we did that.
And did that work better?
No, it didn't work.
I was going to say, I can't imagine that that was any better.
So basically, he was in my life for quite a while before the episode started. And he told me at one point, he said, I have a girlfriend. And I said, I don't need to sleep with you. I just want to work with you. And I think I really believed that at the time. But then we were working together every single day. And I really started to fall for him. And, you know, that's when everything went south.
So what did you do at his house? Please tell us. This is my favorite story.
The time I smoked in his bed.
Yeah, tell that whole story, though, because that's really funny.
So, you know, he was used to, you know, getting his way. He was very, very, very wealthy. He had this beautiful mansion, basically. And so one night I was at his house and I couldn't find him. He told me he had to do a work call. So I had been drinking, and back in the day I used to smoke. So I couldn't find him. So I started smoking a cigarette in his bed. And then he came in and he's like, what are you doing? And I said, well, I got bored. I couldn't find you. He's like, so you smoked in my bed? The next day, you know, we started to go home, and he drove a BMW 7 Series, and I said, oh my God, you just think you're so cool, but this is like a dad car. Why don't you have a Ferrari or something? So I was always messing with him. You know, when I saw his house was decorated really nice, it was like, are you gay? Because no straight guy can decorate like this. It was just, it was always something with him.
And then didn't you try to break in his house later or something?
No.
No.
Not, okay. No.
That wasn't that one.
Okay. No. That was a different one.
Oh, yeah. What was that story in Austin? There was another guy.
What's yeah. So I went to break up with him over Christmas. And he had a bunch of stuff of mine in the house. And so I wanted him to come let me in to get my stuff. And he wouldn't because I was, you know, being a little crazy. That was not an episode. That was actually just being upset. So I decided to let myself into his house, and he got very upset with me and basically said, you need to get out of there. And I refused to leave. And so he called the cops on me and I got arrested. I learned a very valuable lesson. If he didn't want me to get in trouble, but if the police are called out for a domestic, especially around the holidays, somebody is going to jail. And if your mail doesn't go to the home where the violation occurred, you're the one who's going to jail no matter what.
What?
Yes.
So wait, true. If I'm at a guy's house and he does something to me, no, that wouldn't be the same.
No. Just I'm like saying a domestic, somebody. Like, dispute. Yeah, there's a domestic dispute. It. Because actually, the guy this happened with was like, no, don't take her. Don't take her. I'll go. And they said, well, who gets the mail here? And he's like, I do. And they're like, well, we can't leave her here. And so, but it was
crazy. Can't be left.
It, right. We were in Cedar Park, which is a suburb of Austin. They literally called the SWAT team in. And so my joke a used to be team. When Good I get Lord. Arrested, I do it right. You know, I like had the SWAT team called in, and my good friend Shannon came to get me out. And it was so funny because the way I repaid her is I bought her a bottle of wine called Jailbreak.
That's perfect. Oh,
and I also paid him back because he had bought a trip for us to Hawaii. And so I wrote him a $3,000 check because the trip was not refundable. And in the memo line, I put bad romance.
That's perfect. That's
perfect.
It was a bad romance.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, I think when you're bipolar, what a lot of people don't understand, you have extremes. Mm-hmm. And that obviously was one of those extremes.
Right. And so back to Jackson here, that whole thing, like, really, I feel like that mania time, like I was there a lot. Like you were. Because all the divas, people, men, women, you would put them, like we always had get togethers. And I remember that everyone started being so worried about you. Everyone started going, hey, Gabrielle, come, you need to come because I think something's wrong with her. And I would show up and you would be. We always would go to BJ's in Louisville, and
that was our place.
That was our place, and every day got worse and worse. Like, I could go there because you taught dance mm-hmm. there. And so I would go straight from there. And it was very concerning. And we didn't know how to handle it. None of us did, really.
Well, and I remember one night in particular, everybody thought I was drunk. And mm-hmm. I was like, no, I've only had one glass of wine. But, you know, they really were like, oh, my goodness, what's going on? So as it progresses, it does get worse when you're going into the mania, you know. But the person experiencing it doesn't really understand because mania is fun. So they're like, wow, I can do anything. And, you know, I'm going to save the world. And I think you remember me like talking about how we were going to save the world and Jax and I are together. We're going to be together. And so, you know, I didn't really see that. I didn't see what everybody else was seeing.
Right. Because he was kind of like, no, I'm not doing this. So, and you are still in your mind planning a life together and saving the world, but he's like backing off and he's
he was the same way though. I mean, he just started getting really worried about the situation too, because you know, he met this person who was normal and had a lot going for me, and then all of a sudden he sees me just completely flipped out and not logical and literally going crazy. And that's a scary thing for anybody around the person that's dealing with it.
Right. And so then tell us about that crash, because that was a bad crash.
That was a really bad crash. You know, basically, and there's things that I remember and don't remember about it because it goes really fast when you're a mania, but, I was supposed to meet one of his best friends, and that really flipped me even worse. So that day I decided to, and why I did this, to drive around, not take my phone. My phone was dead. I didn't care. I thought the stereo was talking to me. I thought everything was a sign from God. So I was driving around. I had a car full of stuff. And I decided that I didn't want to remember my old life anymore. So I threw out White House Black Market shoes, bags, her purse. Clothes.
On the road?
My purse, everything.
As you're driving?
As I was driving. Not just driving, but driving 120 miles an hour. Literally.
And you're just throwing shit out the window.
Just throwing it out the window. Didn't you good throw it stuff, out the sunroof? Too.
Good stuff. Are you pissed about that now?
Yes. Whoever got that stuff was like, oh my God, it was jackpot. So yeah, if you ever see a bag on the road in 35, you might want to stop and pick it up. Who knows what you'll find.
Well, don't stop on 35.
Who knows what happened to all that stuff.
So in your mind, so your purse too, no phone, like in your head at the time, like, what are you thinking in that moment?
So like, I was really just like, oh, I'm going to have this new life and I don't want to remember anything about my old life. And the boyfriend she was talking about before, Jackson, used to take me on shopping sprees and I had all this stuff from him in my car. And I just decided I wanted to be done with that life. So I threw it all out the window. I mean, it is crazy.
That was really scary, though, because I remember trying to get a hold of her because she was like, you could tell things were not right for days upon days. And then you try calling and the phone is off. And it is so
scary.
And nobody could get a hold of me. So even Jackson was looking for me because we were supposed to be somewhere that night. And our friend Tracy and all these people were looking for me. And I was gone for what? Hours.
Yeah, I don't remember.
So
exactly.
Basically, I followed this lady home because I thought we were going to buy
her house.
Some random lady.
You thought you were going to buy her house?
Yes. Mania does not make sense. And basically she called the cops.
But just imagine you're going home and behind you
is a lady throwing shit out the window.
No, she gets out of the car and says, I'm going to buy your house.
I want to buy your house.
And she's like, no.
She said, hold on. And she went and called the cops. And when the cops came, they could tell I was clearly in an episode. And I think what's so, so difficult and so hard, it's embarrassing because you go back in, you know, they took me into the mental institution and those places are horrific. I mean, it is like being in jail. And then you crash because you're like, nothing that I thought was true is actually happening. So the crash from that is so extreme. And I actually even called Jackson from there. And, you know, that's when he was like, where were you? Nobody could find you. Everybody was looking for you. And I'm like, well, I'm in Green Oaks. He's like, well, I think it's best if we never talk again. And
God, kick someone while they're
strangely
down.
Enough, he did see me and hang out with me after all that happened. I mean, he was a good guy. He yeah. really, really was.
Wow.
Now, he wouldn't want to be in the room with me today.
So, but you got out of there. And actually, you got broken out of there, I think. one of our friends broke you out. You weren't
no,
supposed
you
to leave
you can't break
yet.
Out. They Just won't kidding. Let you break out. Yeah, she did come get me out.
Got you out. And then from there, you went back. Like, you took your medication right?
Yes, I did take my medication right for a while. The doctors were always confused because some of them would just say, well, she's really smart, she doesn't have bipolar. There was even a split decision in that hospital, and one of the doctors was like, I don't think you're bipolar, I think that you're like a prodigy, you're extremely smart, you've got, you know, which a lot of people who have this have a very high IQ.
Didn't know that.
And you were able to trick the doctors, I guess.
Right.
So, but, you know, it's kind of like if one doctor tells you you have cancer and the next doctor tells you you don't, who do you want to believe? So as these doctors, I would always go back to, well, this doctor said I don't have it, so I don't need to take my medication. And taking the medication, you know, because mania is so much fun, life seems very dull and boring sometimes.
Almost like an addict.
It's wild to hear. That I'm just trying to like understand, like
take it all in.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah,
it is definitely. It's always so interesting to me how you are this way,
right?
And then when another guy comes in the picture.
Well, I'm a lot better than I used to be because I am medicated, and you know, it's taken a long time and a lot of work to get on the right medications and to really get to a healthy point. You know, I have to work 100 times harder, a million times harder to be healthy. It's like being a diabetic. If you don't take your medicine, you're very sick. So,
right.
But yeah, I kind of went through Jackson and then some of his business partners. I have to stay away from those guys altogether, as you know.
Yes, I know.
Men in business always make me
crazy.
Yes.
She loves the successful guys.
Oh yes, I do.
All of us.
Well, I think Amber is on a different level attracted to them.
Oh, yes.
Everyone likes a successful people, but she is like smitten. That's why she gets along with Charles so well, because he's gay and it's okay. He's so successful, but he's gay. He's a good one.
He doesn't want
he's
Amber.
Safe.
Yeah.
No, he definitely doesn't want me.
Do you feel like there's people who, I guess if they have it or are dealing with someone who has like bipolar or something like that, like that they are like a misconception, like they get frustrated, like how to help people, like understand people that are like you, like how do you help people not get so frustrated or fed up or like not understanding?
Well, unfortunately, there's just not the right help out there. So the family, you know, my family was completely divided over this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we used to be really, really close, mm-hmm. and there's four of us. And basically, there was a point where none of us were talking because of it. I can't even explain the trauma that happens to the poor family and friends. I mean, Gabrielle, I don't know how many times she's been like, oh, I want to help her, but what do I do? And there's just not enough education around it. And, you know, I've really thought about starting Divas again, but I've also really thought about just sharing my story about this stuff, because I know there's millions and millions of people that need the help and people are scared to talk about it.
People that are feeling like you, like saying I'm depressed or I've like that there's something not right. Right. Or is that
right?
Yeah.
Like so, I feel like because you are so brilliantly smart. Like, I just know that the way you, the knowledge that you have about not just divorcing women, but but your condition. And I know that you actually have made doctors feel like they don't know what they're talking about, because you have so much information. And I think it's important. And when you are on your medication, you are so good. You're so amazing. You really do help a lot of people. And I have been throughout the years, because you have had several episodes, I think it's been sad, because I feel like there are a lot of people that have kind of turned away, and they probably don't believe that anything can happen anymore. And I feel that that's really sad, because the truth is, I think you can move mountains. You can have another business. I believe anyone can do anything that they ever want to do. But there is a lot of judgment, and people go, ugh, she's doing this again. How long will this last, kind of thing? I mean, and that's really sad.
Well, you know, you learn who your true friends are. And in a way, it's sad. But it also, in a way, those people are 10% of the people aren't going to like you no matter what you do. So you have to focus on the 90% that like you, and just, you know, don't even think about the ones that don't. I can honestly say they don't matter to me. It used to hurt my feelings and things like that, but they were going to find a reason not to like me.
Right. That's true. You know? That's actually very smart. Yeah. We all need to think about that.
Yeah.
Marcella.
Yeah. I know.
Those 10% are just haters because you're beautiful and they want to be you.
I don't know why I give them so much attention. I care too much, I think.
Yeah, you do.
Maybe when you're old like me, stop caring.
That is the good thing about getting older. You do kind of care less and less about that.
Yeah.
I do want to touch on the depression a little bit, because, and I think you were starting to say that when people are really depressed, like, mm-hmm. what should they do? Depression, especially with the bipolar, the manic depression, is quite the opposite. I mean, it's hell. You don't see a way out. And unfortunately, I had been in 14 hospitals in 7 years. So wow. I had a lot of episodes, and a lot of them just couldn't figure it out. So I literally had one hospital release me and tell me everything was fine. Then they took me to two more hospitals the same day. And, you know, the other ones kept me. So it's been very confusing. But the depression is, you know, and I lost everything. So it's kind of hard to separate, because I lost everything. Like, is it the bipolar? Is it depression from losing every single thing? But if people are depressed, you know, you have to talk about it. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have the group around me of friends, I would be dead.
Yeah.
There have been many times that we have had conversations about that. And I think what I want to do really quick is I want to take a quick break.
Okay.
And I want to come back and talk a little bit more about your story. And I know that you were on Dr. Phil, and we'll talk about that a little bit. And
I want to hear about that.
So many more things that you have gone through, and I'm just really proud of you right now. And I think you're gonna soar and make amazing things happen. And we'll come back and talk about a little more of Amber.
If you have any specific questions for us, or if you want to be a guest on our show, please hashtag AskTuposh on Instagram, Snapchat at Marcella Ranieri.
Or you can follow me on Instagram, Marcella Ranieri, MarcellaRaneri. And you can also follow Whitley. And that's at WhitleyQuinnl.
Well, my Snapchat is at Gabby Talks, and you can submit questions by emailing tuposhboutique@yahoo.com. And thank you so much for listening.
Happy endings, and spread sparkle everywhere you go. Woo!